We cover many serious issues in this podcast. This discussion may contain reference to domestic violence, sexual violence, violence against children, suicide, drug use, or graphic depictions of death or dead bodies. It is not suitable for all audiences.
Tonight on Unsolved Mysteries Rewind, two friends get together to discuss episodes of their favorite television show, Unsolved Mysteries. Will they find answers? Will anyone care? You may be able to solve a mystery.
Unsolved Mysteries Rewind. My name is Kim. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Mark. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing great, Kim. Thank you so much, and good morning, and I'm really excited for this episode. This is a big one. We've been doing a couple big ones, but this is a pretty big episode.
We have so much to talk about in this episode, but before we get started, I just want to bring to everybody's attention that this was a fan-submitted episode that we do, and this is Matt Mercier's suggestion from the Facebook page, so thank you, Matt, and if you would like to suggest episodes or tell us what we're doing right or tell us what we're doing wrong, you can find us at Unsolved Mysteries Rewind on Facebook.
I'm really excited about the conversations that are kind of popping up over on Facebook in our Unsolved Mysteries Rewind group. We are growing steadily, and people like Matt, who are really a big part of the conversation, really bring a lot to the table. And I really appreciate his participation and ideas.
I do too, and it's so nice to have support, especially this early on. So,
yeah.
This episode starts in Myrtle Point, Oregon. It says 1986. At the time, the population was a little under 3,000, so we have a small little town, but every year they have the Coos County Fair.
Coos County Fair! You can almost hear the commercial.
Come on down! So... we have sweet little Jeremy Bright. He's a 14-year-old boy. He looked forward to this Coos County Fair every August. I guess his mom and his stepdad used to live in Coos County, but when they got divorced, his mom moved away 100 miles away to a town called Grants Pass. And so just for August, she would send Jeremy and his sister Esty down, and they would go visit his stepfather, Ole, stay with him, and just go to the fair, see their old friends, that kind of thing.
I'm always amazed by the alternate spellings of names.
Yeah, so we meet this little... Jeremy's little buddy, best friend, Johnny Fish, and I've seen it every which way you could possibly
you just
spell
cut
Johnny.
Out. His... Kim, I'm sorry.
Oh.
Kim, you no, just cut out for a second.
It was his best friend, Johnny. I've seen it spelled every single which way, but his sister spells it J-O-N-N-Y, so that's Johnny.
But Esty is the letter S apostrophe T-E.
Yeah, it's a unique name, but it is definitely pronounced Esty.
I wonder if she's a rap career.
It sounds cool.
I mean, you know what? When you say it, ST, you know, I'm like, okay, it makes sense, but I will never look at it that way. It's Sate.
Yeah, exactly. Sate, which is also cool.
Yeah. Sate.
So at like 4:45 one day, he calls his mom from a payphone and is like, I'm having a great time at the fair. I just bought this cool watch. And his mom is like, okay, well, I'm going to pick you up in 2 days. I'm going to pick you and your sister up. So at 9:40 that night, he goes to a tavern, and the tavern's owned by his stepfather, or his stepfather's mother. So he visits with his grandmother and his stepfather, and he gets some money from his stepfather, as kids do. And that's the last time that his stepfather will see him. His stepfather is a logger, and so he usually leaves his house by 3 or 4 a.m. So from... Most of the time, the kids were just left on their own.
I have a question about all of this. Is now, where Esty and her brother live are 100 miles from where this fair is taking place.
Yes.
And they're traveling this distance to stay with their stepfather.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm kind of confused on how this works, because they're saying their mother lives in a different thing. Are they still together? Do you know any... I don't really understand why you would send your children away to hang out with their stepfather.
No, it's their former stepfather. They're not together still. But, you know, the kids have a relationship with him. And the main thing is just because they used to live there, they want to see their friends. They want to go to the fair. So he's a trusted adult in their life. So the mom's like, sure. And, you know, a lot of this has to do with 1986.
Now, another thing is it's a poor choice, I think we can look at in retrospect, because maybe he's not that trusted because he has almost no interaction from what we can tell. And he doesn't even realize that the kid is missing, really.
Right, but you know, he's at the tavern till like 10 o'clock at night. He goes to work at 3 o'clock in the morning, so I think he's just kinda doing him and like I said, it's 1986, so yeah, take care of yourself, go ride the bike to the fair, like.
But I'm also pointing my finger. I know you're saying 1986, you know, but I was a teenager in 1986. I would never be out this much on my own at 14. I mean, this kid is going to his grandparents' tavern at 9:30 at night to borrow money, and he's on his own. There's really no parental unit, seemingly. And it just really, I think that this comes down to parents letting Jeremy do kind of what Jeremy wants to do, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I did have this kind of freedom.
Oh, okay. I mean, I different types of... You know, of course, different people raise differently, but I don't know. I just think 14 is kind of young to just be out doing whatever you want.
Yeah, maybe 14, not, you know. And he's in charge of his little sister, too. But it's a small town. There's 3,000 people there, less than that. And I think it's just a trusted time, trusted place.
Right. Well, it was a mistake.
I'm sure the mom is kicking herself every day for it. So the next morning, Jeremy, Johnny, his friend, and Esty meet up at the fair. And Jeremy and Esty separated around 2 p.m. And they agreed to meet up at the Ferris wheel at 5 p.m. So Esty says that she saw him talking to two men later when the police interview her. And that's the last time that she sees Jeremy. So his mom is on her way to pick the kids up, and nobody has told her that, like, we haven't seen Jeremy in 2 days. And the mom comes into the house, and she sees on the television set his watch, his wallet, and a set of house keys.
Yeah.
So the next night, I'm sure after some on-the-ground searching, the next night she calls the police to report him missing. So the cops said, oh, he probably ran away to join the carnies.
What is that? I mean, that's crazy. Not a thing, you know, I don't think.
And it's also the first of many times that the police will just be so rude and disrespectful to poor Diane, the mother.
It's so dismissive. It's so like, yeah, you know what? Maybe he ran away.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like, I don't want to do my job. I want to go on the whirly whirl.
Yeah, I didn't think about them. Oh, now that's adorable. All I could picture is like two detectives skipping with like cotton candy going on the Ferris wheel together. So... Sunday, the fair packs and leaves town, and nobody has seen Jeremy. So all of a sudden, all these rumors begin to surface. So the first rumor is that Jeremy goes to a party and he goes to get a beer, and a stranger put, and I quote, a stimulant drug into his drink.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, and Jeremy had a heart murmur, and this could have killed him. So apparently, it is a fact that Jeremy was at like two or three parties that night. And yeah, he's a teenager on his own. He's probably out drinking. But doesn't that sound like some 80s
also
nonsense,
a different way that I grew up. Yeah, it does sound like...
So the first theory is that Jeremy is at a party, and it is a fact that he was at like two or three parties that night.
Sure.
And someone went to go... He went to go get a beer, and he's a teenager, so he probably would be drinking. And a stranger put some kind of stimulant drug into his drink, and I guess he had a heart murmur, and that could have killed him.
Yeah, and you did point out how this isn't something that I think that our average, in our teenage years, which we're very far apart, but at the same time, probably just as reckless. These are not things that happen so casually. Of course, stimulant drugs are the ones that tend to be a little bit more expensive on the street.
Sure.
And you're not just going to say, hey, you know what, let's give this guy some expensive cocaine and see what happens. Oh, he feels great. You know, so it's not one of these things that happens so awesome, except in, I'm going to give you the 100% coining of the term 80s nonsense.
It does sound like a cautionary tale. You know, do you know where your kids are? Maybe a stranger is giving them cocaine in their beer.
Now, at a dead show in the early 90s, I met a cute hippie chick. And she gave me some Kool-Aid or something. And it had acid in it. And I never saw the girl again.
Oh, my God.
Now, I was in a safer space. She probably thought what she was doing was a favor.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had actually listened to what she was saying, she probably was telling me that it was in there. But that was, that was 20-year-old me or 18-year-old me. So, so some these things do happen, but I just don't believe that people are trying to do it to kill you or put you in this situation where it's reckless. I think there's a good chance that Jeremy drank a lot, maybe smoked a lot of pot or something more available. Maybe he got sick. Maybe things got reckless. Maybe he was a mean drunk. I'm not really sure. But it sounds to me that the stimulant drug thing, I don't know. I'm not really seeing that happen so much.
No, it's a little fear-mongering. And I see what you're saying. Maybe he drank a lot and maybe he threw up and maybe he aspirated on his vomit and
been there.
He died. Yeah,
well,
it happens. Well, the second theory, talk about some 80s nonsense. Like, this is kind of crazy. So Jeremy is at the local swimming hole.
This is ridiculous. I'm sorry. I was waiting for Kiefer Sutherland to walk in at this point.
Yeah, so it's very Stand By Me. So some ne'er-do-wells come up to him and they're like, hey, I got a gun. I'm going to pierce his ear. What do you say? And they just start like firing willy-nilly into the water, right? And these young teenagers, it's so crazy. So they shoot him.
Yeah, that's common. That's something that happens.
I don't know. It depends on what part of Oregon you're from, I guess. But they try and nurse him back to health. And they bring him back to this little cabin, and eventually he dies, and they bury him in a shallow grave in the woods.
It was like a movie. Like, honestly, that sounds like more of a Stephen King type of situation than anything. Only thing missing is if it took place in, like, Maine.
Exactly. It was very, like, dance, boy, dance, like that kind of thing. And it's like, I don't know if I see that happening either. So
no, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
no.
I know that I'm being kind of lighthearted about these rumors over an actual person's death, a child's death. And I remember watching these things thinking, oh, this is insane. This isn't so stupid, blah, blah. And then we get to the mother. And we don't get to the mother just yet, but it just hit me at that point where I just thought, all right, I have to pump the brakes here. This isn't a fictional, the scenarios might be fictionalized, but the story's real. And it just really kind of hit home a little bit. When I was watching this one, I felt very bad for the mother. She certainly went through a lot of terrible moments in her life with this.
The quote that the mom gives is, all the rumors are hard to handle. All are hard to think about. Every time I'd hear a new one, I would have a nightmare for a week or so.
And I couldn't imagine it being any different anyone.
No, she, like, is truly devastated. And, you know, there is certain things, like you said, we can make light of, like, the silly scenarios and reenactments, you know, that Unsolved Mysteries gives us, and they could be so corny. But, yeah, at the end of this, there is a 14-year-old who went to a fair to have a good time with his buddy and was never seen again.
Right. And this is why we keep all of our children at home until they grow up fully. And they go to college and God knows what.
Just back to the swimming thing for just one second.
Something
I could see being plausible that, maybe he did go swimming was because he left his wallet and his keys and his watch at home.
Oh, that's a really good point. I didn't think of that aspect of it. It's like, all right, I'm going to go swimming. I'll leave all this junk here.
That's something that you would take to a fair, but you wouldn't take when you went swimming. So that I was kind of like, okay, that's interesting. But my theory and most of the internet's theory is that Jeremy's old babysitter did it. Now,
a whole different way, though. Holy cow. It goes from like, oh, well, it's a very sad thing he went away with the carnies, to, wow, this is possibly a real serious murder.
Absolutely. And we'll get into it real deep. And just, you know, before we say this, let's preface it by saying, allegedly, all of this is just what I have gathered from the internet. So we're going to call him Terry, the babysitter. So Terry is actually one of the people that Satie saw with him. He saw Sorry, Esty.
You said Sati.
Oh, sorry. So Esty. I'm sure she gets it a lot, but sorry. So yeah. Terry's cousin is a man who we will call Dennis. Dennis is the person who Johnny's sister Cecilia saw covered in blood that night. Mm-hmm. Dennis also has 47 criminal charges from 1989 to 2019. So Esty said that she saw Jeremy with two men. Dennis and Terry were together. Dennis shows up later covered in blood. So supposedly Jeremy was even seen in the passenger seat of Terry's car.
And I just point out this something here. Yeah. We're talking about a 30-year period here of a 30-year criminal record of 47 charges. Statistically speaking, we're talking like maybe 1.5 crimes per year for 30 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even go through stop signs. What? I mean, I'm not even making a joke here. Not a good person. You know.
No, and this, I mean, the charges range from whatever you can picture. That's pretty much what he's done. Now, Terry actually went on a few years later to fatally stab a woman in Coos Bay, and he was sentenced to prison for that. He is a rapist, a known rapist, and she denied his advances, so he stabbed her multiple times in the neck, and when they would question him, the police, after he was arrested for this woman's death, when they would question him, he would just clam up. And now, he died of a heroin overdose in 2007. After he died, they called him a significant person of interest in Jeremy Bright's disappearance. And they kind of were hoping, because him and his cousin are such like local toughs, as they refer to him in Unsolved Mysteries, they were thinking maybe now that he's dead, some people are more willing to come forward. Unfortunately, no one's come forward except for on Facebook.
Now this has to be taken with a grain of salt, because anybody, I guess, could say this, but it really does align very closely with facts. All right, I'm sorry, go on.
No, please. This post was originally 9 pages long. I'm summarizing it into 2 pages long. But I would like to say that Diane, Jeremy's mother, and Esty, Jeremy's sister, both are like, yep, that's 100% what happened on this post. So, Ole, the stepdad, as we said before, was a logger who worked in the woods. Terry's father, by the way, just a side note, Terry's father was questioned on his deathbed about what he had to do, what Terry had to do with Jeremy's death. And he said that he would take the knowledge of Jeremy's disappearance to the grave. So that's pretty incriminating. So Johnny, sorry, I'm trying to get it all here. After that by the way, Johnny was never the same. Johnny, his little friend, like, he was shaken up. He obviously saw something. He had a 24.5-year battle with alcohol and drug addiction because of this. And he actually died in 2011. He was a homeless man. He was found under a bridge. His poor life. And so his parents took him to therapists, hypnotists, all this stuff, just to try and see what happened to him. And he would never say. Now, one time he was passing through town, this is Johnny, and a relative picked him up and was giving him a ride to Roseburg. So as they came around the corner, Johnny allegedly made a comment that said, if they want to find Jeremy, they should look up there, and never said anything else to the relative. So they actually called police to there, where he was talking about, up on the hill, and there was a bloody sleeping bag recovered. So that's pretty interesting. Now, there are 4 guys said to be involved. I'm not gonna call him out, but we have the one guy, Terry, the one guy, Dennis, another guy I'll call Richard, and one other unnamed man. The theory here is that the 4 of them took Jeremy and 3 of his friends out into the woods and raped them, including Johnny. So Jeremy threatened to tell Ole what happened, and the guys panicked because Ole was a logger and he knew the backcountry really well. So they were like, if he wanted to hurt us, like, nobody would ever find us again. So they actually shot Jeremy right there. Later that night, when Johnny appeared at his sister's house, he was freaked out and he was like, we have to stay away from the windows. Like, somebody could get us if we don't stay away from the windows. So Dennis, when he was all covered in blood, when Cecilia saw him, said that he got in a fight with his girlfriend. But Cecilia said that there was way too much blood to have just been scratches from his girlfriend. Now, the most incriminating thing is the same night that Jeremy disappeared, the fourth guy, who we do not know his name, came home, and his girlfriend at the time said that he came in through the back door, stripped down naked, put all of his clothes in the washing machine, and headed to the shower. So the girlfriend's like, that's weird. She went to go investigate it, and the clothes were covered in blood.
Oh my God.
This same guy also had a gun that he asked somebody else to hide, and that person apparently did turn it into the police. So there seems to have a lot of information that the police have, like the sleeping bag, the gun, that kind of stuff. But they've been so disrespectful to Jeremy's mother. They told her one time that we're just chasing buzzards. Like, that's the term that they use when she was like, please help me find my son. They're like, no, we're just chasing buzzards. So it's horrible. There's a lot of rumors about him being buried in this rock quarry. But his mother on Facebook said, you know, they've extensively searched that many times and he's not there. So on his 25th anniversary of his disappearance, they just decided that, yeah, he's probably dead. And they held like a funeral for him. And they just have to kind of move on with their lives. Of course, they're always going to be wondering what happened to him, but they're pretty sure that he is not alive anymore.
You know, with all of the stories that we talk about that never find a solution, like we never found this body, I have to wonder how many bodies are buried around the world? I mean, around seriously. Just the country.
Seriously.
It's really kind of insane.
They have to be somewhere. Yeah. No, it's so insane. And like, it makes me so sad to see these age progressed photos. And we'll get to another one. We did one last time. We're doing two this episode. And it's like, the person probably is dead. And seeing what they would have grown up into, right, knowing that they never will grow up into that, is so sad.
Yeah. In all fairness, when you look, probably if you were to take a picture of me when I was 11, I wouldn't look like whatever it progressed to be. But I know what you mean. It's always just sad to see what could have been, you know, of course.
Exactly. And he looked like such a sweet boy. And he's 14 and he looks so little. And it's just, this one was a rough one.
Yeah, it was rough. And I really just think that it was a situation where maybe a little bit less freedom for a 14-year-old. I have to go back to it.
I mean, I'm sure she feels that every day, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that. I'm saying use it as a cautionary tale.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, sadly, it's too late for him, I think. And that's it. I mean, it's a really just sad story. But they're definitely trying to move on. They're trying to just kind of live life. They're still around. You mm-hmm. were able to, you came across some social media existences.
Yeah, I came across their Facebooks. Oop. I see that Esty's now like a grandmother,
which is crazy. Is that, and that's the real Esty in the reenactment, right?
I don't think it's her in the reenactment. It's definitely the sister of Johnny in the reenactment. I don't think we see Esty at all.
I thought they interviewed her.
Oh well, if they might have. They probably, if they interview her, it's the real her. Then I thought you meant like in the reenactments.
But I thought I. All right. I'll go back and look at it, but I was pretty sure that the reenactor was also the same person. But I'll go back and look.
Okay.
Not important.
So does that move us to rural Virginia?
That brings us to, yeah, this is, which is always scary to me. You know, Virginia's, I love Virginia, but I know that rural Virginia can be very different than, I guess, the more popular areas of Virginia, mm-hmm. like Myrtle Beach or something. So we have, you made a great observation where you were pointing out how this reenactment was not really up to normal, levels of acting, I think.
We'll post a GIF on the page, on the Facebook page, but my God, his death was so like, I don't know, amateur. It was so bonkers. It seemed like they were just like running through a rough draft of it, and they were like, "Yep, we got it. Roll them."
The police officer is making his regular rounds in the middle of the night, and he sees a vehicle, and he goes to investigate. He sees that the car is parked at a health clinic, mm-hmm. and while he's going to investigate, he sees that the car starts moving, right? Now, they mentioned it was a Cadillac. It's not a Cadillac in the scene. Or maybe it was. I feel like they used a number of different cars here, maybe to confuse the viewer. And the license plate is in the window. You can't really see it in the reenactment. I'm going to guess that this is not a legal place for a license plate, even in Virginia. And as he approached the car, the guy just kind of pulled out his little gun. Boom, boom, boom. It should have had laser sounds. It was like such a weird reenactment.
Yeah, it was
pitiful. It was a cat. I mean, it was like literally something where it's like, all right, we got it.
Yeah. This, and this is season one, to be fair. So they're working out some kinks, but it was weak.
So he goes, you know, the officer is down. He isn't responding to the radio. So the police, you know, they come and they investigate. And the officer says he's been shot. I'm hurt bad. Mm-hmm. And, well, actually, I'm sorry that. Yeah, they come around to physically check on him, and he's able to physically tell the officer that. So he radios in that he's been shot. And do you want to go on with this one? I mean,
yeah. So he gives him kind of information while he's dying about the assailant. He says the man's in his mid-20s. He had a mustache. He had a dealer tag in the back of his window, and it was just like a large vehicle, maybe a Buick. And the license plate read Land of Lincoln. So it's actually an Illinois plate, not a Virginia plate. Mm-hmm. And the cop was actually able to empty his revolver into the car or like in that general area after being shot. So he was rushed to the nearest hospital, and doctors actually were able to pull a 44 Magnum bullet from his body. He then lapsed into a coma, and sadly, he died 3 days later. He was only 39 years old. He had four children, and we meet his, like, young-looking little widow who's just like, I just want to catch the men who did this. So we have an update.
But let me just ask you. So you were saying that the 44 was pulled from the person who had shot the officer.
Nope. Opposite. No, it was pulled from the officer.
Oh, okay. But when he shot at the car, he shot, they found slugs in the car itself later on.
Right. Yeah, they found, so there's two people shooting. The bad guy shoots a 44 into the officer, and the officer shoots his bullets into the car.
Yeah, but when they pulled the slug from the car, it was a 44.
When they pulled the slug from his body, it was a 44.
Okay. All right. Doesn't again, I have to go and like watch it again. I could have sworn they said when they finally found the car, they, I'm probably wrong, but I took it as the police officer had a 44 Magnum, which is a pretty large gun. And it just, yeah. I just didn't really think of it as being a gun on an officer. And I think what you're saying is it was not. It was.
Yeah.
That's right. Just seems like a little too much to just be kind of carrying around.
Mm-hmm. On a night patrol. So actually, we do have an update. On November 5th, police in Illinois found a burnt out car with bullet hole in the door. And authorities were actually able to link that car to a 24-year-old named David Wayne Mills. They searched his house and found more evidence linking him to the crime. And he wasn't there at the time, but they arrested him as he comes home when they're executing a search warrant. And he goes, okay, I was at the scene of the crime, but I didn't shoot the police officer. I was with a friend and my friend shot the police officer. But he led police to a 44 caliber gun, and ballistics proved that this is the same gun that shot Officer Martin. So he was arrested on January 5th, 1989, a mere like 3 weeks before this episode aired, and he was extradited back to Virginia, where he was charged with life plus 15 years.
We have kind of a perp walk as well, with him being arrested, which I thought was kind of interesting. And I'm wondering who filmed this. This is a weird one because the case isn't like a huge case. Do you think Unsolved Mysteries was on the scene?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. They probably got it from their like local affiliate. If this was on NBC, it was probably on the NBC News in Illinois, because a man shoots a police officer. That's a pretty big deal.
It's true. It's just when you're arresting somebody, it's kind of like, all right, look, we're going to wait 10 more minutes until they get here.
Yeah, well, it's a weird story about how he got arrested, because actually his family was contacting this guy Floyd Barlow to do home security in their house, like to build security cameras and all that stuff in his house. So he's like up in the ceiling installing these cameras, and he finds a 44 caliber ammunition, a ski mask, and a money bag from Middlesboro, Kentucky, and an Illinois automobile dealer's tag. So he actually contacted the sheriff because he found all this stuff.
Like, was it in a box saying, like, evidence? You know, it's ridiculous to put all this stuff. You know, I really think sometimes criminals keep this stuff really as a trophy.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And a lot of times, you know, they say some people want to get caught, like deep down, they kind of want to. Because why would you hire somebody to go crawling around in your attic if you know that this is hidden up there?
No. All right. Now, I'm not saying that we're the type of people to do these heinous type of crimes. But wouldn't you destroy this stuff? Even the gun can be smelted down. I'll never understand why people are finding guns, or people throw the gun into the lake. I'll never understand why they just don't physically destroy these things.
Yeah, and it seemed like a real panic move. Like, this guy was not just going around killing police officers. He was going to rob the health center that he was at. My personal guess is probably, like, prescription drugs.
Yes.
And so he was going to rob the place. The cop pulled up on him, and I think he panicked because he could have easily just played it off and been like, pulled out a map and been like, I'm lost. I'm looking for directions.
I gotta go pee. You know, that type of thing.
Yeah. It's rural Virginia.
What's the worst that's going to happen? You get a ticket? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You move
exactly.
on.
Or now you got life plus 15 because you're an idiot. So I don't know. It seemed like it was a real panic move. I don't think this guy was like a skilled assassin, you know?
Yeah. Not like us.
I know, right? My poor husband gets so scared because I do watch like so many of these type shows. I'm like, I could get away with it. But, you know, I haven't. So, and I never would. So please don't come looking at me.
You know, it's kind of funny that you said that, because my wife literally said that to me yesterday.
Really?
Like, she seems like she was getting concerned because we were watching something else. And I'm like, you know, right now with this whole, with the pandemic going on, would be a great time to kill somebody if you wanted to. Like, you could just totally get away with it. And I'm not trying to give anyone any ideas, because what I'm saying is fiction. But if somebody was writing a book about this period of time in the future, they probably could come up with a perfect way of doing this. It just doesn't seem to me to be, like, if you were, I'm not giving any ideas. We'll talk about it off air. But
okay.
I gave her this whole thing because she deals with a lot of terrible things every day having to do with this. And I said, well, I'm finding the loopholes in all of it. And she's like, well, you know, and I think I had just given her dinner. And she's like, so anyway, that's just one of those things where I, sadly, I think that in the future, we're going to see that a lot of really terrible things are happening right now.
And I know of at least two cases off the top of my head where it has happened because of COVID-19 and people using that to try and cover up their murder. So I like it already is happening, but I agree with you. I think that a lot's going to come out in the wash.
Yeah. And it's terrible. It's terrible. People have to love each other a little bit more.
Oh yeah.
All right. So some people, some of the stories on Unsolved Mysteries are strange historical reenactments, and this was a bigger reenactment, right? They seem to always have the one that spent that cost a little bit more. So we're talking about,
totally agree.
We're talking about Dan Willens, who I've never heard of, but he seemed to be a super cool guy.
Yeah,
great
manly
mustache,
man.
Like,
oh,
the handlebar type of mustache, not long, just bushy. And he seemed to have made a lot of money in gold, right?
Yes.
But did he make money other ways? He was just gold prospecting?
I don't know. He's so mysterious that we really don't know. But it seemed like he seemed to have his, like, gentleman time and his, like, rugged time.
Yeah.
So I think he had money for a while. And they did say that he was a very skilled poker player. So I don't know how much money he got from that.
Yeah. I mean, some people, people make careers out of playing poker. You know, it's one of those things. And, I'm assuming he... Probably. I mean, these are crazy people, the prospectors. I mean, for all we know, they could have been playing poker with things like, what do you call those things? Claims. You know, it's like, I'll bet you my claim.
Yeah, no doubt.
I knew nothing about claims and sites until just 2 days ago when I started looking it up. Apparently, if you find gold somewhere, you have to build a 3-foot monument of some sort to claim it. This just seems so ritualistic and so strange to me. You have to put either a wood post, a metal post, or a stone mound, which would probably be my choice.
Yeah, no, that's cool looking. I see your images here, and we'll post that on the Facebook page.
And that came from the government. You know, this is current. This is, you know, if you were to go and find it, you have to stake it this way. I don't know if this is the same way of staking oil, you know, laying a claim on an oil thing. But the whole thing having to do with sharing sites and sharing claims has always been kind of a mysterious thing. I think it has a lot to do with sharing and trying to take all the gold and sharing, I guess, divvying it up. Mm-hmm. Seems very sportsmanlike, though, when we're talking about money.
Yeah,
a little too
sportsmanlike. Yeah, exactly, exactly. Or maybe you just, oh my God, I'm such a murderer. But like, maybe you just have your friend and you're like, hey, let's go out there, Mark. Let's go prospecting. And then after we get all the gold, then I kill you. And then I have all the money, but I got your work out of it.
Is that what you're going to do when this show becomes more successful?
You know, don't you worry about me.
It's the Kim show. It's the Kim and Jack show.
Well, luckily we live plenty apart, you and I.
Yeah. I might be moving more north. But all right. So, but when we're talking about finding the amount of gold that I guess is in their hopes and dreams, maybe it's easy to divvy up $45 million worth of gold, which is what they end up finding.
In like 1936.
Insane. Even finding it today would be amazing. Yeah. But you broke it down in 2020 money. That's over $2 billion found.
Yeah, billion with a B. Yeah.
Now, how much does that weigh? I mean, that's a lot of.
Oh, a ton. Yeah. Like literally a ton, probably. But God, it was well earned, because I can think of nothing I would least want to do than go pan for gold in Canada. It looked so cold. They were like half in the water with snow falling on them, all bundled up, but they're wearing these like wool clothes in the cold water. Ugh, it looked horrible.
Wool. It's like the worst. I hate wool. And it's one of those things because, you know, as soon as it's wet, it's the worst smelling and it's terrible. I hate wool. I'm sorry. I don't think they pan the whole thing. I don't think that's possible. You don't pan tons of gold.
They pan, and then they were like, oh, we found gold, and then I think they built a mill.
Because I would think you would find chunks of gold. I need to look more into how people find these large, I guess, caches of gold. It just doesn't seem to me to make too much sense that, you know, what, it's just floating down the stream?
I don't know, but I'd like to find some.
I'm not going down that rabbit hole. Money doesn't mean so much to me.
Oh, I'm just kidding. Have you ever panned for gold?
Only in simulations, like, you know, in Disney World. I think they had a thing where you pay a lot more than gold, and you pan and you get the dirt, and it's like, oh, look, I found a little chunk that's made of iron ore.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm from California, so we, like, for field trips and stuff, would get to go, and they'd give us, like, a little pan. We'd try and pan for gold and get to keep all the fool's gold you find.
That's awesome, though. I mean, that's the thing. All right, if you're one of the 49ers, right, you're going west, where, all right, a lot of people died from the heat, but at least it's warm. You're pointing out in Canada, I mean, it's...
Ugh.
Do we know what part of Canada that was?
Mm-mm, no, I don't.
I mean, Canada in general is just horrible, especially in the winter. Not horrible, you know. It's a tougher climate than what maybe you are certainly used to.
Yeah,
but kidding. I guess it's closer to what I'm used to. But it's just, you know, it's a lot colder. And they do seem very miserable. It seems it'll be a lot of seriously hard work, but But in the autumn of 1936, Dan Willans mysteriously vanished, and he was on one of his prospecting trips, and people just started kind of searching for him, like, what happened to him? They went to his cabin to kind of investigate, and everything seemed to be in perfect shape. But before that happened, before he mysteriously vanished, we learned something about Dan.
Yeah, he had another side to him.
If he had a monocle, he'd be the Monopoly guy, because he was super fancy.
I have the feeling that he had many a tryst during these times.
Yeah, he was a bachelor, right?
Yeah.
Did he? I don't recall there being much family discussed.
Nope, no wife, no kids, no nothing. He was just a dude out there by himself, which is probably why he had so much money, to be honest.
And he would entertain his friends with lavish amounts of champagne.
Mm-hmm. And wax his mustache.
Ooh. That's a very fancy thing to do.
Oh, and yeah.
You can actually still buy these things. Mustache wax. And
oh, I know. The hipsters have brought it
back. Oh, that's true. Yeah. I guess it's no big surprise. Oh, right in the trash. All right. So, Dan Willans, it becomes like kind of a quick little thing because the guy has kind of two sides of his life. He's like tough guy, and then he's super sophisticated guy.
Mm-hmm.
But both guys vanished. You know, he's gone. Exactly. He didn't. And that's another thing. It kind of makes you kind of question, well, if he's leading so many different lives, couldn't he be just kind of trying something else out? Maybe he wanted to go more rural, or he wanted to do something. And he is the skilled poker player. Maybe he went down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, they said maybe he's British, so maybe he went there.
But we don't know if he's British. There's a lot of weird stuff about Dan.
He's a mysterious man.
So the bottom line is he does vanish, leaving the money in some form. I mean, where does his money remain at this point?
They said with the government.
Yeah, so it stays, I guess, in some type of trust, you know, waiting for the next heir.
Mm-hmm.
Now, oddly enough, as soon as this starts, I guess, probably the Unsolved Mysteries investigators are putting the feelers out.
Mm-hmm.
And we get in touch with a New Yorker who I fully believe. I do believe him, his story, because he does have some level of evidence. Does he actually?
He had like the pictures of his grandpa and stuff.
Yeah, and they kind of seem to work. They seem to interconnect with the original story. And he kind of comes forward days after the broadcast. So there's this update. And he's, you know, I don't know if he ever became the heir of this fortune.
No,
he seems like he's excited that he could be.
He's a little too excited, if you ask me. I didn't like this one bit. It was very vulture-y to me. Like I've had a few people in my life die, and just the like divvying up of their stuff is so gross to me. Like, yeah. I understand, like, let's say, oh, this ring was so sentimental to me, so I want you to have it, blah, 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 blah. I understand that. But, like, dibs on Grandma's KitchenAid is just gross to me, you know?
Well, which one? No, I'm just kidding. I've gone through this with both my parents, and they are like my brothers and sisters are the worst, and they're terrible. And it's like, I'm the guy who donates everything. You know, I'm like, you know what? I don't want mom's TV, you know?
Yeah, it's weird.
And then, you know, my brothers are like, I'll take it. And it's like, well, you're a douchebag, you know?
Yeah. And, like, with this instance, like, they didn't even say anything about, like, oh, I'm happy to know about Dan. Oh, I wonder what happened to Dan. They were just like, I'm going to cash that check. Like, they were so excited about the money.
Right. It's like, how much did he have?
Yeah, exactly. And the guy's just grinning ear to ear. He's like, me and my cousins are going to all split it up. It's just like, ugh.
And he seems to still be around.
Yeah, he's on Twitter.
Yeah, and, I was looking at him. He got better glasses. I'm going to say that much.
Thank God.
He had these huge glasses. I mean, very, very good for the period. Like,
very 1987.
Yes. And I don't know. I couldn't figure out if he had gotten any of this prospector money.
Yeah, I don't know. But at least somebody got it, I guess. Wait, we don't know, actually. Never mind.
Yeah, Canada. Canada got it.
Hey.
The Prime Minister. Jeez. So that brings us back to Virginia.
Oh my gosh, this story is not at all how Unsolved Mystery makes it out to be, and I love it.
Really?
It's so juicy when you like really start chipping away, because there's a lot that didn't make sense to me, so I had to put my diver's helmet on and like go deep. But wow, we learned a lot about Leo Corey.
Do you want to give us the rundown?
I will. Yeah. Richmond, Virginia. It's 1975. There's a security guard named Chuck Kernaghan. He was murdered. His body was placed in a trunk, driven into a river and dumped there. So the police think that it is upstanding member of society, Leo Corey, who did it. He was like a softball umpire. He was active in his church. He was just a good guy, but they think that he did this. So we meet FBI agent Jack Colwell, and he says that Leo is actually the leader of a racketeering enterprise. He was placed on the FBI's 10 Most Wanted in 1979, and Unsolved Mysteries refers to him as a very competitive restaurant owner. He would send thugs in to intimidate his competition and their patrons.
Wait. They said intimidate, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And
the reenactment is not intimidate. Well, it is a form of intimidation, but it is hardcore intimidation.
Yeah, he intimidates them by taking, like, sending these two thugs in with shotguns and just firing into the restaurant willy-nilly, like, right into the crowd.
Right, that's not intimidation. That is assault.
And it's straight up murder, because one of these guys does die.
Yeah.
So in 1977, his associates killed Albert Thomas, and they injured several patrons at the mailbox restaurant.
Oh, that's a nice name. Like a post box, right?
Yeah, and Unsolved Mysteries has like the neon lights that all say mailbox and everything. But wait, hold up. Kim did some deep dive in here. It's actually a gay bar, and it's actually called the Mailbox, M-A-L-E. So this guy calls himself the godfather of the gay community. I guess in Richmond, Virginia, from 1940 to 1970, there was a huge, huge underground gay community. All the sailors would kind of take shore leave there, and they said if they couldn't find a girl to go home with them by 10 o'clock at night, they would go get some men at the bars.
Guys being guys.
That's exactly. All. And no judgment here. We're just telling
the story. No, of course. It's known as the block, you know. And
yep.
I was very surprised about this. You know, growing up in a pretty liberal area, you know, there's gay clubs everywhere on Long Island, you know, and my whole life there's been gay clubs, and it's just, they kind of go right next to every other club. There's no, you know, there's really not much of an issue there, but you don't really associate 1940s and 50s with an open door policy to gay clubs, at least
especially
in my eyes.
In Virginia.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't think of Virginia as a very progressive area.
No
offense to our Virginian listeners.
That's why I had to like look into this more, because I was really surprised. So he was like hobnobbing. It was kind of a little maybe mafia-ishy, and he was kind of running all of these bars in this block, and he would rub elbows with the police so the police wouldn't lock them up, because actually it was illegal to serve alcohol to a homosexual in Virginia in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, and 70s.
That makes sense.
So atrocious.
It's like, well, how do you know that the person's gay? You know.
Yeah, it was so offensive. Crazy. Like, I read this whole article. I was getting so upset just reading, like, how these people aren't considered people, basically. It's like a lower form, and it was just making me so mad, because that's just, thank God we live in a different time.
But, you know, I just want to say that the strip is the strip. I would call it the strip if I was naming the area, but the block is still kind of an area that's a hotspot for our gay community in Virginia, which I think is kind of great. It's kind of lived through this terrible time, you know, and hopefully there's not too much corruption going on right now. But I'm glad that it didn't like get shut down and we're gonna put you know, an Apple store here instead.
I mean, this is like almost 100 years later, so that's really amazing that it's still up and standing. That's great.
Yeah, I agree. And I just think it's also, I looked at it on Google Maps, the area, and it's just, it's, you know, it's like the middle of town. It's a club. It's like there's nothing wrong with it. And it's just, when I think of America in the 40s and 50s, I just have a different view of, there's actually a remarkable documentary, totally going a little bit on a rabbit hole, but if somebody wants to learn about homosexuals and their depiction in cinema. I believe it's called the, oh my God, it was just on the tip of my tongue, the celluloid closet. And it's a really, really phenomenal thing. And it goes all the way back to the beginning of film. And it talks about homosexuals and their depictions, and how pre-code films, really brought it to the forefront. And I think it's a really fascinating little documentary from the, I think, late 90s. Anyway, I'll put a link to it in the show notes.
Yeah,
it
sounds great. Awesome. Yeah, thank
very,
you.
So we're very pro these type of things. You have to be who you are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So in October of 1977, Corey, our guy, the godfather of the gay community, actually asked Eddie Lohr to put out a hit on restaurant owner Jim Hilliard, his competition. So Eddie Lohr was actually found hiding outside of his house before he could make the hit. So he turned on Leo to the cops, and the cops decided to wire him and record a conversation between him and Lohr. Now, this led to Corey being charged with murder, attempted murder, extortion, assault, racketeering, fraud, and arson. So he hightails it, and the FBI has put him on their list, and they're offering a $25,000 reward. Something interesting about Virginia and how sexually halted some people are is I decided to look at this FBI agent, Jack Caldwell, and just see what I could find.
Mm-hmm.
In 1977, he was suspended from the FBI for lewd and lascivious behavior. So I was like, hold on, this is juicy. And I click on it, and the lewd and lascivious behavior was cohabitating with a woman he wasn't married to.
Hmm.
Like, who cares? And he was suspended from the FBI for this.
There has to be. I mean, maybe she was married to like her, his boss or something. But it's that. Yeah, I mean that just seems to be a bit of like, what does that have to do with his job? You know,
exactly. And the article actually said that there's like they were not allowed to fornicate unless they were married and stuff. So I think that's literally why he was like was because of all this. It's so crazy.
But you know what? That sounds like Virginia to me. Again, no offense to our Virginia listeners. It just. From a New Yorker standpoint, I think of, you know, the southern states as being a little bit more backroads with their thinking, even though I know people from there and they're not like that. But this is the type of thing to kind of overcome. But, it, you know, all of it's happening anyway. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of these people would agree with you that it is kind of thought to be less liberal than New York. You know, I don't think that's a controversial statement, but we do end Unsolved Mysteries with an update. In 1991, a 56-year-old man claiming to be William Franklin Biddle died in a San Diego hospital, and the FBI have positively ID'd him as Leo Corey, and his case is now closed. But a little fun fact is that at the time of his death, he set the record for the longest time spent on the most wanted list, which was 4,441 days, but he has since been surpassed by Victor Manuel Garina, who was on the list for 11,904 days before his capture.
Holy moly.
Yeah, so interesting. Interesting guy. I feel like we could watch a whole documentary about that guy and his life.
You know, I wouldn't be. It actually sounds like it would be a very interesting type of modern crime type of story.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Let's write it if there's not one out there.
I'll bleep that. Don't give away my secrets.
Oh, sorry.
No, but, you know, it's funny that you bring that up, is there's all of these amazing, amazing stories that are about real life, and there's probably still people alive who have something to do with it. And it's a big story, but so the kidnapping of Michaela, is that it? Michaela?
Yep.
Garrick.
Mm-hmm.
This is sad. This is always
so sad.
You have this little girl on the scooter. Did you have one of these scooters?
No, but I was a little girl who was allowed to go like four blocks away by myself or with my little BFF. And we, at her age or younger, were allowed to go down to 7-Eleven and spend our allowance and then go back home. Like, and this was in the 90s. So I guess I just put myself in this little girl's shoes, but I really felt like I could relate to her.
Yeah, me too. I was thinking about myself, and, you know, of course, when we were younger, like you were saying that you had a lot more freedom than what I guess shoved down my son's throat, maybe. But and I absolutely had a lot more freedom. But this is a normal type of thing. You know, like you're like 9, 10 years old and it's like, hey, go run down to the store and get a quart of milk or do whatever, or go get candy mm-hmm. or something like that. And this is a little bit of a throwback because those scooters were very short lived. I don't know if they were in the BMX boom of the 80s, like freestylers. I actually bought one of these things and it was like riding ramps on with them and stuff like that and like half pipes. So was just so weird to see one. You can't find them anywhere. They're super, super rare. Anyway.
Weird.
Yeah, they don't make them anymore.
Maybe, yeah, and I have the feeling it was probably pretty legitimate to the actual story that happens, because the outfit that the little girl was wearing is to a T the outfit that Michaela was last seen wearing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they did some good details.
And this is another scary thing, is that this is how their reenactment is probably exactly how it went down. And it's so easy. He takes her scooter. They go into the store and get some like blow pops or something like that, whatever you get. I think they were carrying a case of, I'm not even going to make a joke. So they, they go in there, they get candy, they come out, they ride their scooters and they kind of park their scooters next to the door. Mm-hmm. And what the guy did is he grabbed one and he put it next to his car. This is a real kind of dirty, clever way of getting the little girl to come to him. Mm-hmm. As soon as she's picking up the bike and totally not thinking of much of anything, being confused as to why it's even over there, he hops out of his car, grabs her, throws her in the car, peels away.
Oh, yeah. And so her little friend runs into the store, which is absolutely the
right move. Oh, my God. Yes.
I was so proud. She runs in and she gets the store woman there to call the police and says, you know, my friend was just abducted. And she goes and they give her like those photo lineups and she isn't able to pick anybody out. But she is able to give a very descriptive sketch of the guy.
Yeah, and so then if this ends up being the guy, because you have three main theories that you were kind enough to dig up and really kind of paint a really scary picture in a lot of ways. Oh. I feel like that first drawing was kind of close to the Speed Freak killers, the person that you posted.
Yeah.
Close enough,
so there's
anyway.
The Speed... Absolutely. And I guess we'll post this on the Facebook page. Why not? I mean, this is very common out there information. It's not like we're incriminating anybody, but Lauren Herzog is half of the duo of the Speed Freak Killers, who he very strongly resembles the sketch. And he admitted to murdering Michaela before he committed suicide in his prison cell.
Right. I mean, now, if somebody's dead, I don't care about putting their name out there. Or if they're in, if they're in prison and they might get out, then we might not release the information.
Exactly. Yeah, it's more for ourselves than them. But his former partner, half of the Speed Freak Killers guy, said that he did believe that his buddy Lauren was responsible for Michaela's abduction. So these guys were just like methed out of their minds in Northern California in the 80s. And they are suspected of killing 72 people, but it's more than likely that it was actually only 19
I mean, it's crazy, right? No, but I mean, I understand where you're coming from, because it's like 72. It's like unfathomable. But, you know, 19 is also kind of unfathomable.
Yeah, that's like a whole classroom full of people. Like, that's crazy.
Yes.
So they actually searched one of their dumping sites, and they discovered the bones of a girl who was ages 5 to 14 years old. And DNA testing in 2012 ruled Michaela out. But there was a Mary Jane shoe found, and that is the shoes that she was wearing when she was abducted.
Now, you put in quotes the two scary words here, dumping sites, you know, plural. This is another aspect of all of this that really brings it home for me. These people are just so careless, not really careless, but so crass. And so they just dump these victims, these terrible,
like, trash.
Yeah. And it's just, you're rotting there. It's where are, do I have one three blocks from my house? And do you too?
It's,
you
know, possible. Yeah.
It's just really crazy to me. And I started thinking about this more and more from our last episode, where the person had written graffiti on the billboard saying, check a person's shed,
machine shed. Yeah.
And I don't know. I hope I'm not getting like paranoid about it, but it's just, I'm thinking, I'm afraid to dig in my backyard.
Yeah, no, I go hiking a lot, and we live out in the woods,
Yes.
and I go hiking. Of course, I got my gun and my stun gun, and my head's always on a swivel, and I got big scary dogs, so don't attack me. But I always find bones out there, and I'm like, is this big enough to be a small human? Is this small enough to be a big turtle? Like, I don't know what it is,
And then
but
you just
oh,
give
it's
it to your
scary.
dog.
Yeah, exactly. Here you go. Go nuts. No, I never let them
Wait,
shoot because you don't
side
know,
note.
but
How is your dog
yeah.
feeling?
Oh, she's better. Thank you. My dog had cancer, but now she's all good. She got her little toe chopped off, but she's doing a lot better. She's able to go for walks now, and she's having a good
My
time.
two
So thank
dogs
you.
send their love.
Oh, that's adorable. Thank you.
No, but I kept meaning to ask you in real life, and then I just thought I'd do it live. I'll
Oh,
get
nice. Oh,
credit that
thank
way.
you. Sneaky,
Yeah.
sneaky. Well, so we go from like really cute, uplifting my dog is like the best dog and she doesn't have cancer
Thank
to our
God.
suspect number two, because we got to dip it back down. The kidnappers of JC Lee Duggard, Philip and Nancy Garrido. These are just suspects in the case, but people have reported seeing up to five young girls all around the same age on their little compound that they had. And I put a side-by-side picture in our notes and I'll post it on the Facebook page, but they look almost identical, JC and Michaela. Now, Garrido had a very similar vehicle, and JC's kidnapping was also in broad daylight, as this one was. So in 2009, bones on the Garrido property were found and awaiting testing, and a judge ordered that all testing be halted until the JC Lee Duggard case was open, because she actually came out like fine. She not fine, but she's alive after like 18 years. And so they said we can't test these until her case is all over and done with. And from what I can tell, it has never resumed.
Wow.
Yeah, it's so sad. And that guy is the creepiest looking guy I've ever seen. Like, he looks like an alien.
With the guy in the leather jacket or whatever,
Yeah.
blazer,
Yeah.
he reminds
Well,
me of a number of actors. Like he in this photo, anyway. It's a
Tommy Wiseau or something.
The main guy from Rushmore is the guy I was thinking. The
Oh
one,
my God, Jason
yeah,
Schwartzman.
Talia Shire's son.
Well,
I don't know.
he's
It
a
just
creepy
it,
looking dude.
he'd play a I guess Jason Schwartzman would play a good version of this guy if we would ever write that screenplay.
Okay, well, the third guy, and I'm not going to give his full name because he's never been convicted of anything or
Oh, I don't
anything,
want this
but
guy knowing my name. This guy's
no.
creepy.
So creepy. So this guy's name is Timothy.
Did
Timothy,
you see he's holding a library book in
I
this
like
photo,
I've
right?
said this before. Well, he is on a jury trial there, and he actually was kicked out of the jury trial because they realized that he was actually suspected in all these disappearances, and they were like, we don't want you serving on our jury. So I think that's like his little jury notebook.
No, well, it could be, but it looks almost like a library book. Like it has a stamp on the binding.
On the top
And
part, yeah.
I kept, I threw it in Photoshop and I was like, kept looking at it. I'm like, oh, I wish I knew what book that was.
Enhance, enhance.
Yeah. It's not real. You can't
No.
enhance. But,
Those.
yeah, I was just kind of like really kind of trying to figure that out. But yeah, this guy is probably a good example of somebody who gets a little too deep into these things and really kind of becomes a part of it.
Yeah, so there was a rash of kidnappings and murders and rapes of little girls in California in the 1980s. And he would like go up to the moms and be like, I loved her. She was a beautiful little girl. And they would be like, who are you? What are you doing, you weirdo? And like his van would just be plastered on the outside of like posters of the girls and stuff. And the moms would be like, we would feel more comfortable if you never contacted us. So.
Do you think that he got close though, with some of them? I mean, there had to have been. I mean, if you play your cards right, you could probably get some level of a friendship with these people, and
Yeah.
which is even,
Yeah.
far more creepy than, well, it's all creepy. Any type of interaction with these people just to kind of be around them is creepy. But it seems like he really wanted the intimate relationship with these people, not intimate, but like a personal
Like a
relationship.
friend. Yeah, exactly.
And
I don't know. It's he's
overreach.
creepy, man.
Yeah, there's something
Yeah.
that doesn't sit well with this guy. I don't like his shirt.
I don't like any, yeah, I don't like anything about this guy. And he looks like your average dude just walking down the street. Like he doesn't pop out and go, oh, I'm a creeper.
Looks like
But
Tommy Lee Jones with 20 more pounds or something.
well, he was actually obsessed with this poor, poor little girl. This one made me almost cry. This little girl's name is Angela Bouguet. She was raped and murdered in 1983. And so he was obsessed with her, and police monitored him. They found in less than a year, he had visited her grave 90 times. And this is like a six-year-old girl who was raped and murdered. And they found, so it turns out he didn't do it, because they found evidence that she was actually raped by her stepfather. So either she was raped by two people, which is horrific, or, you know, this guy had nothing to do with it. But they found, they brought bloodhounds in, and they found several of the girls who are missing, including Michaela. They found, the bloodhounds picked up on Michaela's scent on or around the grave of Angela Bouguet.
So they also found evidence of other people's death on him?
On her grave.
I'm sorry, you cut out for just a moment. I know.
Oh, sorry. No, yeah, they found evidence of Michaela, I guess, from, like, scent. The bloodhounds hit on Angela's grave.
That is, that's horrifying, but nothing ever led to any type of outcome, right?
Nope, he's free. He's able to serve on juries, apparently. He's still out there just doing his thing in California right now.
Yeah, let's hope not, though.
No, I hope not, too. And Michaela's mom has, like, a very, very sweet and tragic Dear Michaela website, which was actually changed to Seekers Road website. And she'll write, like, happy birthday messages to her.
Oh, my God. I read that. And I read it this morning and on SeekersRoad.com. And it's just so, it's so sweet. And it's very to the person. It's not like, she doesn't write it saying, like, I know you'll never read this. It's like, you're... Yeah. I need to get this off my shoulders, and, you know, this is just how I'm going to deal. And she's a grandma now, and she's talking about that, and it's, you know, it's like the mommy, it's like the woman with a baby type of thing, where she, it probably just comes back like a tidal wave.
Yeah, I can't imagine. And she writes, like, if you're still out there, like, maybe you don't even know your name anymore, but, like, I know that if I saw you, I'd know you, and it's so, so sad. And the mom... They've gone on record. The mom is like, I still believe she is alive. Like, I think there is hope, because look what happened to JC. JC came back after so many years. Mm-hmm. And her dad has said, like, no, I believe she's died. And they have divorced. I can't imagine even, like, remaining married to somebody when you share such a tragic situation like this. But especially if you're on different sides of the issue. That one, they spent 3 minutes of Unsolved Mysteries talking about Michaela. And there's so much more to this case. And I just feel like they didn't do her justice.
Yeah. No, we could end on that note. But one of the criticisms I've heard about our show is that we don't want you to end on a sad note. Or on a real depressing note. So, yeah. So we're going to talk. We have one more story for our listeners. Two of the
Marietta, Georgia.
I love these two. I don't know why I like them. I got a different vibe from you. I thought you.
Oh,
didn't
no,
like
I love them,
for whatever reason.
They are. Who
I thought
Jack
they were
and I
sweet
when we grow up. Oh, me too.
It's. I thought they have each other's backs. I think they're sweet. I think that part of this is fiction. That's just me saying right off the bat. But we'll talk about why. But we're talking about Jim and Kay Tatum.
Adorable. Everybody's grandparents, like, they're so cute.
I love the quote. We're sober. Who are sober and reliable people?
I know. It's like, okay, that was a weird thing.
It's like, all right. It's like high horsing.
I know. And they're like, you're about to hear something unbelievable. But these two people are not crazies. It's basically what they're telling us. Or drunks.
But you know Kay could throw them back. Come on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I loved Kay.
Kay's like, I'll just have a little bit of... What would she drink? Probably a slow gin fizz. Oh, no. I was thinking something like... something light, but not too much. I don't know. It doesn't matter. So stuff is moving around their house. They're having poltergeist activity in their home.
In Marietta, like right outside of Atlanta, but she sees somebody like walk by her line of vision.
Yeah.
And she's like,
do you get this?
I'm over here.
Do you get these type of things?
Every day of my life.
Yeah.
Every day of my life. I get right by only in one spot, right by our front door. Our front door is by our kitchen. And right by there, I swear I see people walking up to the door 5 or 6 times when I'm in the kitchen. Like I see it, a person shape all in the shadows, just like walking past in my periphery.
Now, does Jack see these same things?
No. I guess he does.
No. And the reason why I'm asking is I've spoken to like hundreds at this point of people who talk about poltergeists and people living with, you know, spirits and what they are and how they exist. And there's like the different levels of what they are. There's the intelligent spirit. And then there's one that's kind of stuck in a loop where they're stuck in a time moment where you might hear about the ghost of Molly Hatchet or something. That's just a ghost that may be in a loop. If you just want to go down the road of believing what that is, it's just a moment caught in time. It's not an actual entity. It's just energy caught. While an intelligent haunting would be a living energy entity that can interact.
Oh, okay.
You know? So in my home, we have 5 spots around this whole house where we see the same frigging thing. And one followed us, we like to say. When I'm sitting in my living room, to the left of me is a staircase that goes to a landing and it goes to another staircase. We, out of the corner of my eye, every single time, my wife and I will see what looks like a little girl running up the stairs to the, you know, just like a shadow type thing. This happened 4 dozen times. We've both seen it separately, together, everything. And we both like turned and like, what the hell was that? Mm. My son saw it once and then won't talk about it. Mm-hmm. That's the one that's repeating all the time. The other one is right where I'm looking right now, where it will happen. And it's across from my office attic area where you go down a little staircase and then it turns to another staircase. My house is very tall.
Sounds like it.
And I always see somebody peeking past where the chimney would be going up into the roof all the time. Like I'm always seeing like just a little bit of a something peeking and then I go to look and nothing's there. And this must happen at least once a week. And I always forget about it. I'm like, what the hell? You know, you just kind of habitually will look at something that you are kind of seeing out of the corner of your eye. So I do believe these things can happen, but they're having a different level of activity. They're not having things where they're just seeing things. Does Jack ever see anything? Or is he just, you know, he's real kind of like, nope.
He's like straightforward. Yeah. No, I think he's open to the idea of it. I don't think he's personally ever seen it, but like for just, we are like a little more traditional, like I'm very much a housewife. And so I do 99% of the time in the kitchen, you know, washing dishes or cooking or whatever. So I know that I'm there more, but like I'll have to check the door to see if somebody walked up to our front door and wonder why the dogs aren't barking. But so I've told him about that and he's not like, oh, you're weird, that doesn't exist. He's like, no, those totally exist. But I don't think he himself has seen it, but I'll ask him after this and I'll give you all an update.
Just this morning my son said to me he thinks that he wants to move his PS4 from the living room to another part of the house because he's like, I don't know, he's like, around midnight I'm hearing people knock on the door. I'm like, what do you mean, what? And we have like a mudroom, like a little room that you walk into. It's kind of open to the public in a way. It's like it has a door. You go in there and you can take off your shoes if you have muddy shoes. But there's a camera in there. You know, it's like a motion sensor thing. And we would kind of thing. He's like, I hear knocking. I'm like, well, why don't you tell me about it when it happens? He's like, I'll tell you. He's like, I'll tell you tonight. I'm like, it's just the door being loosened in the wind, I hope. And so, yeah, I mean, we're very conscious of these things. For some reason in this house, but I don't feel like anything negative here, which is good.
Yeah, that is good. That's kind of creepy though about the little girl.
The little girl, she followed us from Merrick, New York, where we used to live. We used to see the same thing. Yeah.
What? That's weird.
Flowing like Laura Ingalls type dress, but all black, no detail. And
oh my god.
Yeah. It's one of those things that.
I just have one more question. Have you named her?
No, I don't think she deserves a name. And I hope she's hearing me right now. I like to piss them off. You know, people are like, well, you don't want to, you know, poke a spirit. I'm like, yeah, I do. Then you elevate
Let's
it.
See what
right?
happens. Yeah, there you go.
No, but you can name her.
Okay. We'll get back to you. We'll have a poll on the Unsolved Mysteries Rewind Facebook.
You know what?
Facebook
That's a
page.
Great idea. I think we should definitely do that.
Name the ghost.
Yeah, name my female ghost who's we think she's about like 9 or 10 or something.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, in my head, I'm getting like kind of the chills because I'm not a believer in a lot of these type of things. And my wife is certainly not a believer in any of this type of stuff. But that she believes because she sees it. Mm. And when you experience something, you experience it. I've yet to see a UFO, but I do believe in them.
Yeah, totally.
So Jim and Kay Tatum are having a little bit more of an experience. They're having physical things. I mean, she's saying that she's seeing somebody walking around to the point where she's like, Jim, I'm right here, Jim.
Yeah, and like hearing change dropping in a jar when she knows she's alone. She hears a drill going, and she thinks that Jim's messing with her. But Jim is like downstairs minding his own business.
Now, that I kind of get this feeling that maybe they goof on each other a little bit.
Me too. That's exactly
Jim's
what
a prankster.
I think so a lot more later, but I 100% agree. I think that these are two old people that are just messing with each other, and I love it. I'm here for it, because he is like, the ghost is like tugging on her shirt when she's like making a casserole. Can you see a husband doing that just to mess with his wife? I could.
Yes, until one part of this interview. I was like, yeah, these guys are full of crap, whatever. You know, like I said, I've spoken to a lot of people, and I feel my BS detector is on point.
Finally.
And I didn't believe them at all.
Until
the guy gets emotional and he leans forward and he's like, and he's talking about it. You could see he's physically getting emotional of talking about it. Uncomfortable.
And she's like rubbing his back. She's like, are you getting upset about this?
He's like,
and
I never saw him like this. Up.
Yeah. And she gives him a big hug and she's like, I've never seen him like this before. And it's like, oh, Jim and Kay, I love you.
Yeah. You guys are going to have a fun night. You're sharing some real emotions now.
I know. Seriously. And so they like start trying to outsmart this guy. The spirit. So there's a little bell. Now, Mark and I vary on how we feel about this.
Yeah.
Jim wakes up before Kay. So he goes downstairs and
it's so cute.
Paper.
It really is
cute.
So cute. Yeah.
Yeah. And does whatever he does. And then when she wakes up, she rings a little bell and he like drops what he's doing and comes running up to her, which like dream of dreams.
No, I didn't hear it.
Yeah. And like, who knows? Maybe like she needs help getting out of bed or something. Like, that's why he comes running. Yeah. But it's so cute. So he comes at the ring of a bell. And so he hears the bell, drops everything, runs upstairs. And she is like sawn log still. She is out.
Right.
And he's like, that's weird. So he goes to turn around and walk away. And the bell rings again.
Yeah.
So that's when he starts getting emotional, because he's like, the story I put on it was like, he's this man, he's going to protect his house, but you can't protect it from this ghost. Like, he was so scared.
Yeah, it was, they tried to outsmart the ghost by, what did they do again? I'm kind of forgetting precisely.
We're going to ring the bell three times.
All right, they had a code. Yeah.
But if you watch the playback, and we will post a GIF of this, he goes, here's what we're going to do. We're going to outsmart him. We're going to ring it three times. And she just goes, all right, we'll do that. She is so not impressed.
It's like, well, you can't say it out loud. You know?
I know. Now he knows.
So it just didn't work. You know, they're I just think one of them is really trolling the other one.
I think they're both trolling each other, because I think that that she said the thing about, I think I saw a ghost. And I think he's like, oh, I'm going to mess with her big time. Yeah. So he starts messing with her. And then she's like, this jerk is messing with me. And he doesn't believe me. Two can play at that game. And I think she starts messing with him.
Now, it turns into another instance. It's not just the bell. He has his 1921 drill out with the asbestos wire. And he's drilling something. I don't know what he's doing, but he shouldn't be doing what he's doing on that the ladder that leads to the attic. Though it's just whatever he's doing. So he has this drill. He's doing drilling, and he puts the drill down and unplugs it, leaving it in the hallway so somebody could step on it. Because he didn't, but he unplugged it because it could be unsafe. But let me leave this drill here so somebody can trip on it.
I know, poor kid.
Doesn't matter. So he goes down. He forgets about the drill. I'm going to go watch Wheel of Fortune. And they forget about it. Kay goes up to bed, and she's in bed, and she hears the drill.
Bum, bum, bum. So she goes to go yell at Jim for teasing her.
But not really. I mean, maybe he's drilling again. Like, I don't know. Like, what's the...
Yeah.
Why storm out there? And she sees that the drill is unplugged.
Yeah, and she goes to touch it, and it's ice cold. So I guess this drill would get, like, super hot, and that's why it's so dangerous to leave it. Yeah. But it's just crazy. Get a new drill. God, Craftsman's around at this
time.
Take
the battery out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Craftsman, that thing is one of those really old-school dangerous drills that overheat and catch on fire. So.
Yeah, that's what it looked like, yeah.
Yeah, it was like magnesium metal. And it's just not a good idea to, unless that's your thing, it's just get a wireless drill, like you said. But I really didn't believe them at all until he really got emotional. So I don't know. I believe that at least he believes.
And can I just say, so she actually starts looking into what's going on when they first notice this, because they're trying to sell their house now. This is like their dream retirement house, and they're trying to sell it so they won't let Unsolved Mysteries show you what the outside of the house looks like, so they could trap some poor people into buying their house. But she looked it up, and apparently it's on a Civil War battleground called the Battle of Kolb, which had like 1,800 casualties. And apparently numerous people have seen crazy apparitions, including in 2007, a father and son were driving and in the middle of the road ran out like a Confederate general on a horse.
Now, do we know the general idea of where they lived?
They're in Marietta, which is much smaller than Atlanta. I'm sure we could look up where the Battle of Kolb was fought.
Yeah. It's just, you know, Civil War was fought a lot in a lot of places. I don't know if I normally buy into a lot of those type of things. The hallowed ground and stuff.
Ooh, but it's fun to think about.
Oh, it totally is. And of course they're having some type of interaction. Yeah. I think it's Kay trolling Jim.
Yeah, I do too. I think, here's what I
think. She took it too far.
Exactly. And I think when she saw him crying, she was like, oh, my bad.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, love you. And then they never saw the ghost again. Yeah. But either way, fun, cute little story to round it out with, yeah, and kind of not make us think of missing girls.
But, you know, here's the thing. Jim and Kay are the goal of a relationship, I think. You know, they definitely seem as though they like each other enough to have fun,
yeah,
to talk about these things openly. And but yeah, if you have any type of stories, you know, we'd love to hear about them, whether it be paranormal or anything. You know, we're always open to any of these kind of stories. I love when they mix the real life craziness and the people who are missing with stories like this.
I do too. We need it. We need it to temper our moods. And there was so much crammed into this episode. I think we got it. And you know, please follow us on Facebook and help us name Mark's ghost.
Yeah. You know what? I can't believe we never named. I have to ask Betsy if we ever named. I don't think we ever named the ghost.
Okay.
She gets a little like Jim whenever I bring up things like that around the house.
It scares her.
Well, she doesn't believe in any of it until we start talking about it. And then she's like, all right, let's just stop talking about it.
Aw, so you're the K here.
Yes, but I do see the ghost.
Yeah, true.
I took it so far as to actually having it manifest. Uh-oh. Now Powerful. We're stuck. Now we're stuck with this demented preteen ghost.
Mm-hmm. Which follows you.
Well, Kim, thank you very much for getting together today. This is, as always, a very fascinating episode. Yeah. And like you said, please follow us on Facebook, Unsolved Mysteries Rewind. And, you know, leave reviews if you want. You know, just... Or share. I think sharing the show with other people who might enjoy this type of discussion that can be lighthearted as well as pretty serious is probably the best thing that people could do. It's just kind of, you know, send them the link. You know, that'd be really appreciative.
Tonight, we have been confronted with an entire catalog of unexplained and unsolved events. Tune in next time as Unsolved Mysteries Rewind discusses another collection Unsolved Mysteries. Until then, we can only look and wonder.